And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
High in the air, Brito back at the wall. Adios, pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 232 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy Baggerly. Andy, 232 career doubles for Rich Aurelia. Have nothing else to say about that, but good giant, Rich Aurelia.
Oh, Grant, I've been waiting for this day. I've been waiting. I thought for sure this would be your Easter egg. 232, it's a very important number, I thought for sure you would go in a different direction.
Oh no. What did I miss?
The all-time walks record by Barry Bonds in 2004.
Oh my gosh. How did that not show up? I searched. I won't detail how I searched for these little Easter eggs, but how did I miss that? Oh my gosh. That's way better.
I don't know. The guy had a 1.422 OPS. He had a 263 OPS plus, and mind you, 100 is league average. Every time I look back at that 2004 season, I mean, 2001 is goofy. 2004 is just bonkers, silly goofy. I mean, it's just, everyone just decided, we're just not going to pitch you any strikes. And they threw him a few and he hit those out anyway. So yeah, I just, anytime you can call back to Barry Bonds' 2004 season, I think you should do it.
I think so. And you know what? That actually does dovetail nicely into some Rich Aurelia knowledge that I have, where when Barry Bonds got his number retired, Rich Aurelia was one of the Giants who really had a bond with Bonds. He really had a relationship with him. They got along for whatever reason. And so he was going to be on the field, but they gave his chair to Eric Gagne. And I just thought that was awful and funny. And there you go. I honestly, I don't remember the ceremony, so I don't know if he got his chair back on the field and if he was able to participate. But I remember hearing that for at least a brief moment, Eric Gagne was taking his spot, and he was rightfully saying, "What the hell?"
Well, that is bad form, I guess, if you look back on it. I will say that Rich Aurelia has every reason to be devoted to Barry Bonds because he batted in front of him in 2001 and had 206 hits, hit 324, drove in 97 runs, and got himself a couple of nice contracts in the future from the Mariners, I think, gave him a lot of money, and then the Reds after that. So, yeah, I think Richie probably owes maybe one of his houses to Barry.
In 2001, the two combined for more home runs than I think the 2009 Giants hit, the 2010 Giants hit, the 2011 Giants hit. I mean, that was one heck of a year. I know we're not here to talk about Rich Aurelia, but I just had to throw that in there. Those two combined had like a team's worth of home runs.
Well, and now to bring this into current news, we have HBO announcing that they are going to do a Barry Bonds documentary. I think some of the people who are behind The Last Dance are going to be involved in this. And what I thought was interesting on the news release that they put out is that they're still open to having Barry participate. So this is not an officially licensed Bonds on Bonds, sycophantic, you know, him crying on a couch kind of a thing. This is going to be kind of a, hopefully, an even-handed kind of look at somebody who, as we both know from, you know, following his career, is not easily put into a box, even though he was very easily put into the villain box. And certainly there are a lot of reasons for that, valid reasons. But, you know, somebody who I think is a very interesting character study. And it'll be fascinating to me to see who all participates in this.
I hope he participates. I think if you look at, you know, what Michael Jordan did with The Last Dance and warts and all, I think that really elevated Michael Jordan, not that he needed elevating, but for a generation, he was the crying meme guy. And, you know, getting that out in front, I think, was only a positive for his legacy. I would think that it would be the same for Barry Bonds, who is complicated and I think would have stuff to say. So, I'm all ears and eyes for that documentary.
Yeah, I just think it's fascinating. Not that you can, they're perfect comparisons, obviously, but, you know, Michael Jordan, I think, showed during that documentary that, you know, he's got some not so wonderful personality traits. And, mm-hmm. and obviously he's made some bad decisions in life as well. And I think when we decide that someone's a hero, maybe we just kind of look past the things that we'd rather not dwell on. And if you decide that the guy's a villain, then maybe you're just kind of reductive and you just look for all the ways to confirm that that box you put them in. So I think that's always fascinating, you know, who becomes a hero and who becomes a villain, and often, you know, in the grand sweep of things, it makes sense and you understand why, but there's often a lot of nuance there too. And with Barry, I think there was a lot of nuance that got trampled on. And you know, again, his personal trainer was he let him sit in jail for not testifying. I mean, there are some reasons to really you know, that Barry Bonds is consigned to his place in history that's maybe not commensurate with his accomplishments. I mean, there's very good reasons for that. But, you know, there's also a lot of fascinating stuff. And so I hope that the documentary gets into that.
Yep, I agree. Let's talk about the state of the Giants. And I think the best way I can put the state of the Giants right now is that they've lost two games in a row. They dropped the series to the Pirates at home, and I personally am not that concerned about it. This will happen. You'll drop a series. You'll have a day where one of your starting pitchers doesn't have it. You'll have a game where you cannot get runners in once you get them on base. It feels like the Giants have progressed to a point where you don't have to overreact to a couple of bad games. Is that about accurate?
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. If they had played Wednesday's game, you know, on, you know, May the 1st, I would be like, well, this is who they are. And now I watch them after, you know, being five games over 500 in May, six games before they lost the last day. I see, hey, they put up 10 hits and four runs against Mitch Keller, who probably is a down ballot Cy Young guy this year. And they've hit, you know, really good pitching most of this season. And, you know, they had a game go a little bit sideways, but that really isn't who they are. That hasn't who they've been. I mean, they were five under in April, five over in May. And I think if I just look at the aggregate and the sort of direction of the team, I kind of feel like their identity is closer to May than April. Doesn't mean that they're going to go gangbusters. And they've certainly had to play well in May to keep pace with the Dodgers and Diamondbacks, who also played very well in May. But yeah, I think that you can kind of focus forward and they've got a really good Orioles team coming in. And I don't know, I see a series dropping two or three to the Pirates, and I don't see it as, well, this is who they are. I see it as, well, you know, it was one game.
Yep, that's about right. Now, let me ask you, what is the number one rule of baseball writing? Let's see if you can get this. The number one rule about baseball writing.
Get the score right?
Well, okay. The number two rule about baseball writing.
Spell your name right in the byline?
Oh, damn. Number three. No, what I'm going for is never write about the bullpen, because they are going to the second you say, hey,
I was going much more basic.
Hey, the bullpen's going great. You know what's going to happen after that. But I think I'd like this bullpen a lot now, and I think it's doing good things. Your feature on Luke Jackson was excellent. He's back. He's a part of the plans now. Ryan Walker is just about the funkiest reliever that I've ever seen who doesn't throw sidearm. He's just got the weirdest cross step, and I'm really into it. Jacob Junis is doing better things. His control, his command's getting a little bit better. You have Brebbia, you have the Rogerses, you have Scott Alexander doing good things again. I kind of like this bullpen, but I don't want to write about it. Is talking about it the same thing? Did I already commit a faux pas?
I think we're doing okay. You know, I don't think we're, you know, the thing is, they've had some things really not go right. I mean, if Ross Stripling can figure it out and be an important part of this pitching staff, kind of like Sean Manaea has figured it out, I mean, that's another feather that's potentially in their cap. They haven't had to rush Kyle Harrison up to the big leagues out of expressly because of need. They've allowed him to continue to develop even when, you know, he's looking like he can miss bats in the big leagues pretty easily. They don't have to necessarily, you know, rush him up, or they can take their time and really make it a development decision with him, which, you know, again, we may see him very soon anyway. But there's still more to come. And I was reading, you know, our newsletter today on MLB that Levi Weaver and Ken Rosenthal put together, and they were going over the trade market for starting pitchers, and it's looking like it's going to be pretty darn, you know, bleak. And and the Giants may be in great shape relative to other teams because, you know, they have a lot of pitching depth, and this is really what they assumed would be their team strength. And I think, you know, especially early on in the season when it looked like they had three functional starters and then just throw it together, it was kind of a question mark as to whether that depth was really going to be as good as they thought it would be. And, you know, I think it's all moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. And for my other podcast, I have to talk about all of baseball, and I will say things without thinking about them too intensely because, you know, I'm just trying to scramble and pretend I know what I'm talking about. So I will talk about the Orioles and say, yeah, the Orioles, they're great. I think that what they can do is trade for starting pitching and jump the market. And then my more learned coworkers and co-hosts will say, who would they trade for? And I'll think, and I'll look at the teams that are bad. It's, well, they can simply trade for the Oakland Athletics' best starting pitch. Oh no. You know, and there just aren't that many players or pitchers to trade for. You know, the White Sox, you could maybe get Lucas Giolito if you're blowing them out of the water. I don't think they would do that. Yeah, not a ton of starting pitching. And so you can say, well, how deep are the Giants if you've got Ross Stripling with a 7 ERA? Well, I don't think that's who Ross Stripling is. I don't think he's going to be the all-time worst pitcher at giving up home runs. I think there's something to work on there, and I think he's closer to his career ERA, which is just a hair under 4, than his current ERA, which is just a hair over 7. So I think that does qualify as depth. I think Manaea has been looking good. I think Junis has been looking better. Tristan Beck was looking much improved, and his slider is definitely a major league quality pitch. So yeah, I still like the depth, even if some of it hasn't gone right at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the standings don't really give you much of a clue right now. You know, Corbin Burnes, I think, is probably the number one guy who would be available on the trade market, except the Brewers are 3 games over .500 and leading that division. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, the Reds, a team that's got, you know, a lot of young pitching. And you think, well, maybe they might want to deal one of them. I don't know, probably not. But they're only 3 games out for as awful as they started the season. And then you look at the Boston Red Sox, and they're, you know, 28-27. The Blue Jays are 29-27. And they're the fourth and fifth place teams in the East Division. And they're, what, maybe 4 games out of the wild card. So, you know, they're further back than, like, the Reds are, which is kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, I don't think there really has been much separation in the standings. And I guess there usually isn't by this stage, unless you happen to be the A's, who've done a fantastic job separating themselves. But yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot of clarity yet as to what the inventory of players might be at the trade deadline. And we probably just have to give it a little more time to shake out. See if the Phillies just absolutely tank and they're, you know, they're going to have to try to reset in some way. You know, they're 5 games under .500. There's still a lot of movement that can take place.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Is there a way for the Giants to galaxy brain their way into taking advantage of this on the other direction? To say, hey, you know, we are willing to part with some of this depth and make room for Kyle Harrison or Keaton Wynn and feel comfortable with that and do some sort of, dare I say, shenanigans with a three-way trade or even just getting prospects back?
Well, so my first thought is no. And I thought, you know, Jim Bowden was talking about which players the Giants could trade. And I'm like, dude, they're trying. They're trying to win, right? But if you really think that the Giants are trying to make themselves basically the Tampa Bay Rays of the National League, and there's a lot of similarities, there's been a lot of players that the Rays have traded away who've been good players. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, players who were at the top of their rotation. And they traded him as they've gotten into arbitration, especially, and they've gotten other players who have turned out to be pretty darn good. So I guess I wouldn't put it past the Giants to, if they see a deal for Alex Cobb where they can get four or five really interesting players, including someone they could stick in their rotation next year. Would they do it? I mean, maybe, but they also feel like they've got a lot of pitching in their system. I mean, Carson Wisenhunt just had another. Outstanding start for Eugene, and I'd be surprised if he's there the next time he throws a baseball. So maybe they don't feel that pressure to kind of load up the system either, because you can only protect so many players. I mean, especially when you get into 40-man roster, Rule 5 area, you can only protect so many. So you gotta try to make sure that your inventory is kind of leveled out throughout your organization, so that you don't have too big a bulge of players in one sort of service time bucket.
Yeah, that's a good point. I always forget about the limitations. The Rays, I mean, you mentioned the Rays. They always are running into that. That's why Brett Wisely is on the Giants right now. It's why Joe McCarthy was on the Giants earlier. It's just we like this guy, but there's only so many spots to go around. So, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I'm just kind of spitballing here. I think the Giants like their depth. They'll keep it. There will always be a reason to need that depth, I think, is their philosophy, and it's a correct philosophy. If Kyle Harrison blows his way to the major leagues, they'll figure that out then. But I do wonder if the plan for him maybe is more similar to David Price in the, oh gosh, what year was that? I'm going to date myself. Was it 2008?
It's funny. I just Googled that because I was trying to think of the other guy besides David Price. It was Chris Archer I was thinking of. But 2014 was David Price to Detroit as the big player in a three-way trade. The Tigers sent Drew Smyly and Willie Adames to Tampa Bay. Willie Adames turned into a pretty good player, obviously with Milwaukee now. And Austin Jackson goes to Seattle.
Well, Austin Jackson.
Future great Giant.
I was referring to when David Price came up and he made, 14 innings in the majors before the postseason. And then he became the secret weapon in the postseason. And the Rays getting, all the way to the World Series with the help of just throwing this young, untested David Price in there and saying, yeah, why don't you hit this, Boston? And they couldn't. So maybe that's the plan for Kyle Harrison. I don't know. I don't think there has to be a set plan just yet. But I wonder if that's creeping into the Giants' head.
It could be. I mean, they've certainly been very, very deliberate with all their minor leaguers. Nobody is really, throwing a lot of innings. They're managing pitch counts. I think Richmond still hasn't had a starter go five innings all season. And, Kyle Harrison is only now being allowed to throw 70 pitches. So, yeah, a lot of that may be, we want to be sure we can use the whole season, not have to shut people down. And if we want to be able to move them and challenge them up at the next level, or even use them in the big leagues, make sure that they still have, some pitches in their arm to do that. I mean, I'm just looking at David Price and in the minor leagues that year, he made 19 starts, it looked like, and threw 109 innings. So he definitely was not overtaxed in terms of his minor league workload, and that allowed them to use him down the stretch. And he pitched in five games, one game started, and it was a pretty good weapon for them.
I mean, let's be clear, the Giants are 500 as of this recording. I don't think we necessarily need to war game out how they're going to reach the World Series. I think that's premature, but I'm just fascinated with how they're limiting Kyle Harrison. And I think part of it is, he's a young arm. They don't want to overtax any young arm, but also maybe there's a way that they can use him that's creative and unusual. But I'm going to awkwardly segue to another minor leaguer because I want Luis Matos up. Get me Luis Matos, Andy. How does he fit on the roster? Gimme.
Well, now that Austin Slater's back, it'll be a little tougher. Talk about your development potential massive success stories. I mean, this is a guy that, he was kind of right there with Marco Luciano in terms of, being a back-end top 100 prospect guy. And Luciano obviously had the back thing, and he's on the field again, and he's mashing home runs. And my goodness, some of the swings he's taking have been just majestic for Richmond. But then you look at Matos, and he not only went from struggling in at Eugene and just basically just, softly putting a lot of pitches in play, popping a lot of pitches up. He didn't really have his lower half. He had some hamstring injuries. And And they got him healthy. And not only that, they really worked with them on approach. And now he's walking as much as he's striking out. And he's putting the bat on the ball like he always has been able to do at every level. And he's dominating AAA and also playing a fantastic center field, as he's done basically throughout his career. And he's like one of the youngest guys in AAA. So I think that there's every reason to be super excited about Luis Matos right now.
I just feel like he's the perfect prospect for what the Giants have been looking for the last, I guess forever since Chili Davis. But I mean, he is, he's speed, he's defense, he's athleticism, but he's also bad on the ball. And when he was coming up and when he was a hot prospect in 2021, you looked at the lower walk rate and you said, yeah, well, A, he's 19 in San Jose, but B, the walk rate isn't as important as he's making contact. He's bat to ball. And if you can make contact and you can get a consistently high average, you'll worry less about the walks. He's got this bat to ball skill. It's unique. He's a unicorn. Well, now he's added the walks. He's kept the low strikeout rate. I think he had the lowest strikeout rate in the minors last year, even as he was struggling. And he's just kept it. And he is, I'm fascinated by him because he's so unlike your typical Giants prospect. He's so unlike most major league prospects. And I want him up. And I don't know how quite to make that work, but help me out, Giants.
I have one quibble. Whenever you type Luis Matos into Baseball Reference, it sends you to a page of an Orioles reliever who pitched from 2000 to 2006, and you can't get to the Luis Matos you want. It's more, you have to click the minor leagues tab. You have to find him. Oh, there he is. Okay, here he is. Here's Luis Matos. Wait, no, that's not the right Luis Matos. This guy played for Rocky Mountain in the Independent League. What? How can I get Luis Matos up on Baseball Reference? They need to make this easier.
Well, I see someone and they have like a weird Independent League, I always click through to see like, oh, who were his teammates? You know, maybe can find something fun. And then there's like, you know, oh, he played with Ruben Rivera in the Mexican League. Yes. Like I love that stuff. Baseball Reference. What would you do without Baseball Reference? Like if you were a scribe in the 70s or 80s, would you carry around a baseball encyclopedia in your backpack as you went to the press box?
Friend, let me tell you about the beginning of my baseball writing career. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was like 23 years old. I'm on the Angels beat. I'm traveling for the first time. This is like 2000. And I carried the Total Baseball Encyclopedia with me. And I carried a full collegiate dictionary with me. And I checked a bag and it had my books in it. And I checked my luggage everywhere I went because you couldn't, you know, carry on those books and all your clothes for a week and everything. And I remember like, you know, having to lug those things upstairs and stuff. And I just laugh when I think about it now. I haven't checked a bag in like 10 years. And that was probably to bring back like a bottle of whiskey or something. So, yeah. So, you know, I'm actually looking at it right now, my Total Baseball Encyclopedia, and I'm thinking, man, I used to lug that thing around with me every single city. And I'll tell you what's more, there was one trip, it was an Arizona, Baltimore, Tampa trip. They had Arizona in Interleague, and I'm in the press box, Randy Johnson's pitching, Troy Gloss is batting, and anyone who's done a circuit of the press boxes knows that Arizona is probably the most lively in terms of foul balls because you're just angled a little bit down the first baseline. So right-handed hitter, it's just the perfect angle. And what's hard is as it goes up, you can't see it because as it rises, you can't see past the sort of ceiling of the press box. And then boom, it comes right in and it's on you. So it goes up, and this thing must have had a ton of spin on it. It was like a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Troy Gloss is a big dude. It was about as hairy as a foul ball can get. So I bail out of the way. I do not close the screen of my laptop, and it could not have been more centered. The impact was right in the center of my laptop screen, and it shattered it, the liquid crystal. And that was my personal laptop. And I'm working for the Riverside Press Enterprise. There's no getting them to FedEx me a laptop. So I went to like a Best Buy or Circuit City or something, or Radio Shack, or who knows what was going on back then. And I bought the smallest monitor I could. Now, remind you, this is when CRT was basically, you know, the top technology. So this was a big CRT 13-inch monitor. And I lugged that around for the entire rest of the road trip. along with all of my big books, my reference books. And yeah, I still think of like, you know, lugging that stuff upstairs, and I'd have to like go like get my luggage, bring it like 30 feet, go back, get the big box with the monitor, bring it 30 feet, you know, drag it to the taxi cab. Yeah, that's that was ridiculous. That was flat out ridiculous.
See, I always put myself in the bad spot because when I go on the road for work, I stop by record stores. And what I like to do is I like to go to I like to buy bands or artists that are from that region. So when I was in Chicago, I got a bunch of Amal Jamal records. When I was in LA, I got a bunch of Birds records. But then you got to carry them home, and vinyl's kind of heavy when you start stacking them up. So I always do it to myself. Don't recommend that, but you have me beat. A gigantic CRT monitor. yeah, that's much worse.
So when you go to Chicago, you don't get Chicago. When you go to Boston, do you get Boston? When you go to Kansas, do you get Kansas?
I already have.
How about
Boston?
Oh, you do?
That first album's a banger. Come on. That's a great album. No, you know, I should. I should go and get a little bit more literal. Where else would there be... when I go to every time. Yeah, that's a good point. Every time I go to Oracle Park, I stop by and I get some Bay City Rollers.
Maybe you could get some REO Speedwagon in Rio de Janeiro. And now I'm stretching it. OK,
I will say you have told the Troy Glaus story before. And I just have to. But not the CRT amount. I'm not saying you're repeating yourself, but I have to repeat myself because when I hear that story, I always have to bring up Kerry Crowley, who is now our colleague. He's now an employee of The Athletic. He was a master at shutting his laptop and pushing his wheelchair away whenever a foul ball came close to the press box. I was always in awe of that. He was a ninja when it came to avoiding foul balls.
Oh, I'm very good at it now too. In fact, we had one just the other day. It was in Minnesota, and our colleague Dan Hayes, I think, has taken quite a lot of grief from the broadcasters for, you know, biffing a couple of foul balls this year. And they even gave him like a big giant oversized glove that they presented to him and showed it on the telecast. But Dan, being a good sport that he is, had fun with it. And JD Davis hit one right at my face, and I closed my laptop screen. I pushed my chair back, bailed out, and this thing came within like probably 8 inches of still hitting my laptop. I mean, it was that close. There was one I had where Paul Oduka nearly took out my laptop, and I did make a play on that one, and it went off my hands. But yeah, it's when they come back in the press box, they're not those big loopy, you know, pop flies that are coming down. They're usually hard line drives back. And so, you know, I'm not going to break a finger. You know, I got to use that thing, man. I'm typing a story. So, yeah, no shame in my game for bailing out.
Man, I'm Googling Paul LaDuca's note. Remember in the Mitchell report, was it the Mitchell report where Paul LaDuca had like a handwritten note? Like, hey, thanks for the steroids. You know, basically, do you remember that? Am I making that up?
Oh, I remember Matt Hergis had like they had a canceled check and he wrote thanks exclamation point in the notes field to Kurt Radomski or whatever it was.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, no slander suit Paul LaDuca, because I might have misremembered.
You know, you're in the Mitchell report. It's close enough.
All right, fair enough. So Orioles coming to town. Can we coax Giants fans into a Buster was better chant when Adley comes up to bat?
Oh, how about a Patrick Bailey's better? Oh, wait, he's been playing. Oh, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But, you know, I think it's a good reminder. You know, the Orioles are exciting. They've got a lot of young players. They've got a lot of talented players. They've got more coming. You know, Heston Kjerstad is, you know, thank goodness he's back on the field after this heart scare. And he's, you know, doing big prospecty things in the minors. And, you know, they've got a lot of talent, and that's, I think, there's nothing that'll get a fan base more excited than, you know, players coming up through the system and contributing, and because, you know, they're going to be there. They're going to be around. You can cheer for those guys for the foreseeable future. And they're not, you know, Carlos Rodon, where even if they're a force of nature and awesome to watch, you know, you've got them for basically a year. You're just borrowing them. So, you know, the Giants are getting into that mode with maybe Casey Schmidt, Patrick Bailey. These guys aren't the Adley Rutschmans or the top, you know, number one picks or top 10, prospects in all of baseball, but they're contributing at the big league level, and there's more coming. So I think this is a good time for the Giants to be, going up against the Orioles, and I think it's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of really good young ballplayers on the field.
It is a drag that there are fewer Dodgers-Giants games. I do miss those. Those are always fun, but I'm really enjoying the balanced schedule. When the Orioles come to town, it's like, oh, yeah, I get to, you look at their baseball reference page and you see Felix Bautista, and he has an 18 strikeouts per nine inning. Like, he's striking out 18 batters per nine innings. And that's absurd, and I want to see why. I cannot fathom, I know I can go online and look at every pitch he's ever thrown in the major leagues, but it's cooler to just see it in practice live against the team you're covering. So he's a 6'8 guy, a big, big dude just striking out the world. I love seeing it. I want to see Rutschman. I want to see the Orioles and how exciting they are in their youth. So I'm so far just loving the balanced schedule, even if it's fewer Giants-Dodgers games.
Yeah, I mean, how about Yainer Cano? I mean, this guy has been insane. He finally issued a walk. He hadn't done that all year. But he's got 30 strikeouts, one walk in 29 innings, and he's given up three runs, all season. And this guy kind of came out of absolutely nowhere. I mean, last year with the Twins, I'm looking at his stats here, and he had 13.2 innings. He walked 11, struck out 14, really wasn't that much better in the minors. And he's not a young guy. He's 29 years old. So, and now he's one of the best relievers in the American League. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like up close too.
I wouldn't do this normally, but I have to, and I'll tell you why. So it's actually pronounced Yainer Cano. And the only reason
I'm connecting, correcting me.
Well, the only reason is because I corrected Andy McCullough on my other podcast. And I feel like correcting two different Andys on Yainer Cano on two different podcasts, it's like hitting for the podcast cycle. Like, I can't put my finger on it. It's so the opportunity just seems so weird. I have to take it up.
Well, you're being equitable. I mean, you can't correct one Andy and not the other. I mean, I think you're just, it's only fair. It's only fair. And it's only fair to Yainer Cano as well.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't want to correct you, but when Andy McCullough makes a mistake, it's like, idiot. So we have a different relationship. I've got different relationships for both Andy. So, all right. This has been episode 232 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week, and we'll talk about the Giants and what they did against the Orioles, and see you then. Thanks for listening.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.